You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with a debrief where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including an aging homeless population, a controversy over autism and telepathy, and May Day protests across the region. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
And I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And Jane, you published a story this week about the increase in older homeless adults. First of all, before we get into the story, why did you decide to cover this?
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing this story for a while. I've seen a lot of data about how so many homeless people now are seniors and older adults, and was really curious about what was happening there and why that is. I've talked to many older people in homeless camps throughout our region who have lost their jobs and then now maybe are having trouble getting a new job because they're older or disabled. They've ended up on the streets. And we know that nationwide, almost about a fifth of people who are homeless now are age 55 or older, which is new. That's quite a lot, and that number has been increasing in recent years. And I talked to one researcher who did clarify that they do consider 55 to be a senior citizen, because their health is so poor at that point that these homeless older adults really have the health profile and the health issues of someone in their 70s or 80s. And so I really wanted to investigate what's happening there, why is this happening, what potential causes and solutions are there, and to talk to some people about their experiences with this.
So what did you find about those causes?
There are a lot, and they're kind of varied, but there are a lot of similarities sort of across the board. Usually in someone's life, if they're older and they've become homeless, there's a moment where something happened at some point, some big life moment. They lost their job, they got sick, their spouse or partner got sick or died, they got divorced. And then a lot of people just don't have the savings or the financial cushion to fall back on, and then they end up on the streets. Sometimes it's also just an increasing rents. We know that rents have been increasing everywhere, and then people can't afford it anymore. They have nowhere else to go. It's a tight housing market. We also know specifically for older people that Social Security has not kept pace over the years with inflation. So even if you've been paying into Social Security, whatever you might get is not necessarily enough to cover rent and food and whatever else you have to pay for nowadays. We also know that people over 50 are most likely to spend more than half of their income on rent, which is quite a lot. You're considered rent burdened at that point. And then I talked to Dr. Margot Cashel, who's the director of the UCSF Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative. And she said in her research, she's seen a lot of people who have worked their whole lives, but they were maybe working in low-wage jobs, maybe physically demanding jobs, and they just weren't able to get any savings. And then, like I said, one day something happened that they can't financially afford, they can't recover from, and then they're stuck. Maybe they end up on the streets and in that sort of difficult position. So here's what she had to say about that.
These are people who've paid into Social Security their whole lives, but frankly, their rate of death is such that many will never live long enough to get the Social Security out.
So she said that there's, like I said, high mortality rates, like she said, high rates of chronic disease. These older homeless adults are dying. Their mortality rate is three times higher than the general populations. And she said something like this happening is actually pretty common. So for these older homeless adults, almost half have never been homeless before, before the age of 50. So it's after the age of 50, something happens, and they end up on the streets for the very first time. Again, there's some problems with trying to find housing. It's hard to find housing. It's hard enough when you're homeless with all of these struggles. And then for older people, there are additional challenges. Maybe the housing that's available is physically inaccessible. Maybe you can't make it up a third floor walk up. And so there's all these sort of additional challenges on top of the usual things that you have to deal with when you're homeless. And so here's Dr. Cashel again.
We need to look ourselves in the mirror as a society and realizing that we are letting our elders die out alone in the cold or the heat, deeply traumatized, deeply frightened, and die alone and outside. And that is unacceptable.
Wow. So what sort of solutions are there to address this crisis?
There's a lot of sort of multi-pronged things happening because, as I said, it's sort of a lot of individualized problems between rent and housing and all these other things. As I've covered, there are a lot of programs in general addressing homelessness and those various social services and nonprofits. There are some that are sort of more specifically tailored to people with medical needs, people who are disabled. There are some programs in our region. I know the Gospel Rescue Mission in Grants Pass has been working on something called Mission View Village. Village, these sort of tiny home projects specifically for seniors. And then one sort of preventative solution that I included in my story is Hearts for Seniors, which is part of Hearts with a Mission down here in Southern Oregon. And they're basically helping seniors who are housed with whatever they might need. So usually that's some companionship, but also a lot of people need help staying in their homes. So clearing pathways through so that people aren't evicted, cleaning up the yard so they don't get fined, putting on a new roof. One guy I talked to had broken his hip when he fell on his front porch, and so they built him a new ramp so he could stay in the home safely. So that's sort of a preventative piece of helping older people stay in their home so they don't get into a more dire situation. And then I also want to look at another sort of potential solution or piece of this is medical respite care, which provides sort of acute medical care for people who might have just been released from a hospital or inpatient setting and they don't have anywhere else to go. So that's the next story that I'll be working on that sort of ties into this.
A little teaser for us.
Exactly.
All. Well, Justin, you had a story on a Medford psychiatrist doing what I think many would consider some pretty strange research. Can you tell us what is this research and how did you hear about it?
Yeah, so the story involves Dr. Diane Powell. She admits that it's pretty strange and kind of fringe research herself. She's a psychiatrist in Medford, and just to note, she's a real psychiatrist. So she went to Johns Hopkins. She actually taught at Harvard Medical School for a bit.
So those are great credentials.
Yeah, good credentials. But she's been drawn to some pretty fringe research topics throughout her career, and that includes studying telepathy or ESP or mind reading, some things that, you know, a lot of Ashland people might be also interested in. And over the years, she's also had a focus on the telepathic abilities of those with autism. So especially those with nonverbal autism, those are people with autism that have trouble speaking. And I came across her work after she kind of exploded in popularity due to a podcast called The Telepathy Tapes. That podcast involved a filmmaker delving into Powell's research, and then it goes off in a lot of other directions. But it reached the top of the charts, Spotify charts for a time. That filmmaker that produced the podcast, she was on Joe Rogan's podcast. So there's also been a lot of articles written about this podcast, including in The Atlantic. So I thought this was kind of cool that this psychiatrist was in our backyard. And I went to go visit her and just see what her work was all about.
So can you explain what that work is about, how she's actually testing those with autism for telepathy?
Yeah, she showed me a video that kind of lays out the basic premise. So in the video, there's a child named Haley, and she has nonverbal autism. So she has trouble speaking. Her mom picks up these face down cards on a table and shows the camera what the image is on the other side of the card. And Haley's across the room and so presumably can't tell what that image is. Then a therapist will ask Haley to type out what that image is. And she's using a digital letter board that kind of looks like an iPad, but that kind of detail will be more important. I'll explain later. But Haley gets it right like over and over again. She types out triangle or strawberry, whatever that image is on the card. And, watching the video, it's pretty impressive. It's at least interesting, you know. For me, just to be clear, I'm not saying this proves that, you know, nonverbal autistic children have telepathy or anything like that, but Powell actually thinks there is something there. And to be fair, she does think it needs to be tested more. She seems pretty scientific about the whole thing. But this story, you know, wasn't really about trying to prove again whether telepathy exists. That seems to be the goal of that podcast, The Telepathy Tape. So if you're interested in that, you can check out that and see if that's convincing for you.
But it sounds like Powell, as a scientist, wants her studies to be replicated.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. In your story, you got into another controversy, I guess, around Powell's research. And surprisingly, it's not about the ESP claims. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, so this is what I found actually more interesting than the ESP claims. It's this huge pushback against certain methods used to communicate with nonverbal people with autism. And it basically comes down to that letter board the therapist used in Powell's video that I explained. There's a number of groups and organizations that are against using those letter boards in certain ways, specifically when someone's holding it, or sometimes someone can be touching the arm of the nonverbal person or prompting them in certain ways. One of the larger groups against this method is the American Speech Language Hearing Association, or ASHA, And Asha, so they're not against letterboards per se or people spelling words to communicate. They're against doing this in an assisted way. So with a therapist holding the letterboard, for example, or again, like prompting them in certain ways or touching their arm. And it seems like a pretty small distinction, like either, you know, having a letterboard on a table and someone, you know, using it independently or just a therapist holding a letterboard. But the group, you know, goes as far as saying that the human rights of an autistic wow. child might be violated if they can't communicate freely. And basically their point is their communication can be influenced by the person assisting them. They don't outright call this a parlor trick or anything, but they say that something is going on here. And what their goal is, what the point they got across to me was that they want these nonverbal people to be communicating as independently as possible.
Well, letterboards have been studied pretty extensively. What does the science say about the debate?
Yeah, there's a lot of studies on this. And the question behind a lot of these studies is basically, is it the nonverbal person actually communicating when using a letterboard with this assistance or not? Is the facilitator or the one assisting them kind of influencing their answers? And from what I found, there are studies supporting both sides. It was a bit overwhelming actually going through all these studies. It's been studied for decades at this point. There's a lot saying that, you know, there's a lot of studies saying that it's actually the facilitator or the person helping that is the one responsible in some way for the spelling. But there's also studies that track eye movements of those that are nonverbal and show that, you know, they're actually looking at the letter before they point to it. And that kind of, you know, for the authors of the study proves that it's the nonverbal person authoring these words and these sentences. I will say, besides the science, there are a lot of parents that swear by this method of using assisted spelling. So they really believe in this method. You know, my big question was just why don't you just put the letterboard on the table? Why do you need the facilitator? That seems like it would solve a lot of these objections. But the groups in favor of more assisted methods say that people with especially severe autism need a facilitator in many cases, and that's because they have trouble with motor skills or keeping their attention, and using a facilitator or someone assisting them just makes them more comfortable and able to communicate.
Okay. Well, you spoke to a Medford parent with an autistic daughter. What were her thoughts on this?
So she heard about the Telepathy Tapes podcast a few months ago and became pretty interested in it. She has an autistic daughter, like you mentioned. Her daughter has trouble speaking. And this mother also says she thinks her daughter can read her mind. She gave some examples of that, which you can read in the feature. But that was kind of besides the point when I was talking to her. You know, what she really wants people to understand is that those like her daughter are more competent than many have given them credit for. She said the school system especially really failed her daughter because teachers didn't assume she was intelligent. And Dr. Powell makes this point that IQ has nothing to do with autism. You can be severely autistic and have really high IQ, obviously. So this mother wants a way to be able to better communicate with her daughter and even get to know her daughter in a deeper way. Because her daughter has trouble speaking, it's been pretty hard for her. So she wants to try using a letterboard in an assisted way to help communicate with her. And she wants to, you know, start this process with Dr. Powell's help. And that was basically my takeaway from the story, you know, why the Telepathy Tapes and Powell's research has been so popular, especially with parents of children with severe autism. They think the world hasn't given their children the benefit of the doubt in their intelligence. And people don't actually know what's going on inside their mind. And they want to prove that there's something in there that, and they're able to communicate. They're full human beings in there, even though they can't speak.
Well, it's certainly an interesting story. Thanks for covering that, Justin. And Jane, quickly before we go, you also covered a protest that happened in our region yesterday. What were people out protesting?
Yeah, so it was International Workers' Day or May Day, but yesterday was really focused on pushing back against the Trump administration and some of the actions it's taken, defunding public services, threatening immigrants, terminating thousands of federal workers. Protesters said their goal was basically to make their voices heard and bring awareness to what the presidential administration is doing. So I was at the protest in downtown Medford yesterday. There were hundreds of people there. It was a pretty hot, sunny day, but there were a lot of people there. There was a protester dressed up as the Statue of Liberty, some people wearing those handmade costumes from Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale with the red and the white bonnets. honking, music, drumming. There was one counter-protester who showed up, but didn't stay long. All seemed pretty peaceful. And this was part of sort of a national protest movement that was happening yesterday. There were similar protests across our region and across the country as well.
Well, thanks, Jane, for going out on a hot, sunny day to cover that. That's it for the debrief this week. Thank you for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.